This is Dave Sudsy Settlemyer on Nasty Knuckles. Jump on the wagon, you'll love it.
Listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Terry Nasty Settlemyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Regalia? What a weekend.
Oh, yeah. You recover yet?
Recover? Buddy, rest and relaxation, rejuvenation. What were the words you gave me? Regeneration and regurgitation
recovery,
was
relax.
Said. Regurgitation was said by a friend of ours. That one doesn't really fit in.
No, it does not.
It doesn't. But fans of Philly, cannot thank them enough.
Yep.
Joe and Paige. Joe wasn't there. He actually got a little food poison. Sorry, buddy. I heard about that.
Yeah.
But
double booked himself.
He got He did. But that looked like fun, too.
Yeah, right.
They looked like they were having some fun down there in Tampa, but I don't think they had as much fun as we did. Great time. Like I said, Paige was awesome. She was the HBIC, the head biatch in charge, what she was calling herself, and she was that. We had a great time, though. Seriously, can't wait for Nashville.
Oh, yeah. No question. I think there's going to be 500 Flyer fans going to Nashville.
Yep.
Looking forward to that. But a hell of an experience.
Yes.
They absolutely know what they're doing, teeing this thing up perfectly for the fans. It was an amazing time. Got an opportunity to see the Flyers play Vegas. So we had a watch party, and then we're at the game there in Arizona. But the Flyers are now on a three-game winning streak.
Yes, which we called. We
did call it.
If they win in Vegas, they had – I mean, listen, we kid around, but you have to win these games.
You have to win these games.
Beat Arizona.
Yep.
Everybody's like, oh, for sure they're going to win. And we said they were going to win.
Yep.
But you still have to do it.
You have to.
You have to win these games. And then last night they come back with another great effort. Totally dominated the Devils team. And they should.
But they are. And that's the most important thing is they're scoring.
Yeah.
They're attacking. You know, going back to the Vegas game, you know, Vegas is a better team, obviously, of the last three. And Carter Hart stood in his head and
he was
essentially won the game for them. But they still found a way to score goals. They got a shot by a country mile in that game, but nonetheless, they found a way to win, which is the most important to break a 10-game losing streak, which wasn't easy to do on the road. And then they followed up the effort in Arizona, which again, you know, it was somewhat close early on, but then you know, the Flyers opened up and they were obviously the better team. They found ways to score goals. Get a couple goals from JVR.
He's hot.
He's back.
This guy gets on a streak. Him and Cam.
Yep.
Him and Cam with a big hat trick last night. But you're right. They found ways to score in Vegas, and that's what you have to do. Actually, have gotten a couple bounces now because so many went against them.
Yep.
Just thinking about the game in Arizona where the goalie just said, "Here you go."
Oh yeah, right.
right up the middle.
Freebie.
I think I could have buried that.
I think you could have.
I think I would have buried that.
I
may
that
not
one.
Have. Been in that area. I probably couldn't have gotten to there.
Yeah,
but
right.
Either way, man, great trip. Can't thank fans of Philly enough, and just can't wait to go again, man.
Yeah, it was an absolute blast. Got an opportunity to meet some new people.
Yeah,
some just amazing Flyer fans that have been on these trips before.
Yeah,
so super cool experience. Looking forward to Nashville, and they know what they're doing. So check them out, fansofphilly.com.
Yeah, you want to join? Trust me. What a setup, too, by the way.
Yeah, it was a great spot.
Quickly. Oh, Riles spent most of the weekend in the hot tub.
In the sun, in the hot seat.
Advantage. He was enjoying that. Caught him sleeping a couple times in there.
Oh, chats.
You were sleeping.
Rest and relax,
eyes shut. It's okay.
Before the storm, dude.
That's true. It was awesome, though. Like, thank you guys again. And like Riley said, check them out, fans of Philly. You want to jump on these trips. They're amazing. Amazing.
Yep, so... Flyers are you know,
a streak.
On a streak, obviously, now. You know, two's a streak, three's a streak.
Yes.
But they got games coming up that are absolute must wins. I mean, I think every game now is a must win, but these games that the opponent is in the same situation or even lesser, you know, they absolutely have to capitalize off these games and keep this going. I like where it's going. You know, the last two games are absolutes. They had to win those games, and they did, but they're playing. They just look like more of a team.
Tighter on the ice. Last night, that was an absolute dominating effort.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, it sucks because they had lost the jersey twice. So you watch that game and you're like, how in the heck did we lose to New Jersey? And not to shit on the Devils because they're rebuilding.
Right.
And Lindy Ruff's done an unbelievable job there. But Flyers just, they played the way they're supposed to play, the way we expected them
exactly,
to play.
Exactly,
and it just takes, we had said this over the losing streak, you just got to get something to get you rolling, get the confidence back. You definitely saw some confidence last night because some people don't understand, Riley, you played, you know, I was around it. Those aren't easy games to win because people are expecting you to win. Those are the ones you drop, you know, sometimes. But they did not. They showed up. Mike Yeo had said this was a big game. He stressed that before. We have to come out ready to play tonight for the fans, for us, keep this thing going. And they did that
from
the get-go.
And how much do you think of this success is coming from the coaching change? I know, like, again, the last two games should have been winnable games, absolutely, no matter what. But, like, they just seem to be playing more like a team. Do you think this has something to do with the coaching change, or is this just total coincidence?
Well, I think it has something to do with it just because you saw them play this team a week ago and a week before that, and they were nowhere close. And that the last New Jersey Devils game was scared me.
Yeah.
Because you go into there needing a win, and they looked lifeless, which I know they weren't, but that's the way it looked.
Yeah.
So I think Mike's, you know, kind of changed a couple things up, and he's got them. They looked tight defensively.
Yeah.
They look, you know, everything's close.
Yep.
Stay connect.
Yeah, stay right? connect.
French Mike, that's his saying. I used to love when he would say that, but it looks
it's
like
true, though, right?
They are staying closer together. Guys aren't flying the zone. I mean, there's so many little things, and hopefully they keep this confidence going. Like you said, the next couple games are must wins. And the way they're playing, I don't doubt that they're going to win these games.
Yeah, 100%. And then on the offensive side of things, I feel like we kind of mentioned it, is that they're attacking a lot more.
Yes.
And didn't have a power play last night, but the power play looked better in Arizona.
They were
at least like funneling pucks too and getting to the net.
They seem to be moving it really quickly.
Moving it
like
quicker.
Boom, 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 yeah.
You know, maybe it's like a two-pass rule, two-pass and a shot.
Yeah.
We did that back in the day with the Phantoms and stuff, and teams do that. You know, if you don't have anything, go around the horn, 1-2, at least get a play to the net, you know. And whatever the philosophy is, they're certainly attacking more 5-on-5 in power play. So it'll be interesting to see how this thing moves forward, if they can keep this momentum rolling.
Yeah, I hope they do.
They have to, otherwise they're going to be gonna be chasing behind the rest of the season.
Yeah,
it's not gonna be fun.
I think they get these next two, and not to say they don't get more than that, but you know, they lost 10, but you just pick up three, so you pick up 6 points. All of a sudden, that wild card spot's not
100%.
It's right there now.
It's not so far to reach.
You drop two of those games, or even one.
Yeah.
But they won three, and that's what they were looking for, and I really think they've got it going in the right direction. But you know, by the looks of these last few games,
absolutely, I agree, Nass. Well, let's get rocking. One of our awesome sponsors, MyBookie.
Yeah.
From all the biggest games to the smallest events, make every bet worth your while with MyBookie, Nass.
Listen, guys, seriously, start by doubling your first deposit instantly with MyBookie's first deposit bonus. Double your money before you even place a bet. And all you have to do is sign up and deposit using our exclusive promo code Knuckles at MyBookie.
Have you been doubling up, Nast?
I do double up.
Oh, love to hear that. There are tons of great games and prop bets to take advantage of this week, but let me point you in the right direction for your first wager.
Listen, get in on the action now. Ladies and gentlemen, there are a ton of hockey games on the slate this week, plenty of NBA, and some big matchups in the NFL.
Where the hell else are you going to be getting your first deposit doubled?
You don't.
Use promo code Knuckles and double your first deposit up to $1,000.
Yes, sir. Take a look also, guys, at the unique props, teasers, and parlays all offered right now. My bookie. Check it out. Seriously, it's the best.
Let's go.
Woo.
All right, dude. Let's hop into episode 53 with...
Sudsy. Dave Sudsy
Settlemeyer. Yeah.
Get ready.
Let's go. Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemeyer. And this week's guest is a guy I know fairly well. He's pretty much a legend around here. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dave Sudsy Settlemeyer. Dad, welcome to the show.
Thank you, son. Riley, good to see you, man.
Hey, Sudsy, what's happening?
Oh, just had a rough day at work and just happy to be here with you guys.
Thanks for joining.
Out at the golf course.
Yeah, you know, you weren't too late, Dad. We waited for a while, but it's all right. You're worth it. You're worth it.
You're battling a little cold and flu, or what do you got going on?
Yeah, I got a little sinus stuff going here. Yeah. Come back to New Jersey and my head blows up.
It happens.
It does happen. You're working at your golf course?
Yeah, Burlington Country Club. Great people there. I've known the pro for years and a few of the members. So it's fun. I enjoy it.
That's cool.
You are a ringer on the golf course, aren't you?
I used to be.
Yeah. You used to take everybody's money.
Yeah, right.
I'm in the old folks club now.
Yeah.
That's all right. He can still play. I play with him. He's fine.
This cat.
Well, Riggs. I mean, Elvis has a better swing than you. I mean, let's be honest. I'm kidding. Riggs would be good, Dad, if he actually, like, try, like, maybe you get on me for practice.
Yeah.
Like, if we have a tournament coming up, there's no going to hit any balls. It's just step to the tee and let's go. And he can't understand why it's going into the woods. And meanwhile, we go through six sets of balls, I think, cases. Usually.
Oh, yeah, easy.
Close.
Easy.
I played behind him in a tournament once. I witnessed. Yeah. We put some helmets on and we're behind him.
Yeah, for sure. So, Dad, you know, we were with Fans of Philly last week. Great people. So much fun. They take us on a few trips. Our next one's in Nashville. We'll be better.
You might want to sign up for that.
I'm in.
I got 500 fans.
I got cowboy boots.
I've seen him. He's got the dancing boots. But Riley obviously knows a lot about you. But someone asked me about kind of your journey and asked about me and you. And I started telling him a little bit of your story. And Riles was like, "Dude, like we got to get him on. Like, this is amazing." And it really is, I guess, because it's me and I've known it. I think it's awesome, but I didn't realize, like, other people would be like, I mean, usually when I tell them, they're like, "No way."
Yeah,
that's crazy.
It is pretty wild.
It's a wild story how, you know, obviously being both of us from North Carolina, you being from the metropolis of Summerfield, North Carolina, try to find that on the map. Kind of basically just a... if you don't mind, like telling us how you kind of got started being a stick boy in Greensboro with the Generals.
Well, in 1959, they started the Greensboro Generals in the Eastern League. Your granddad had a little car lot. We happened to know the owner of the team, so he started bringing all the guys in to buy cars because my dad had give them a good deal, take care of them. We got season tickets. Went to the game, and I thought it was the greatest thing I ever seen in my life. We were there every night. I'd miss school and go watch them practice when I knew they would practice. And so just the guys coming over to the car lot, hanging out, they come over and play cards and dominoes with my dad and stuff after practice. So when I was 13, they let me be the water boy, stick boy. So I did that for 3 years, and by the time I was 13, 14, I said, "Hockey's what I want to do. I love it. I'm just going to do anything I can to do it." Playing in a recreation league, we used to get to play 6 to 8 games a year. You'd see the ice about every 3 weeks. The first year I skated, I was like 9 years old. Wake up at 5:30 on the ice at 6 and get your 45 minutes in and then come back 3 weeks later.
Wow. 3 weeks later. I don't know if I'd be going back.
So I hung with it. And so when I was 13, I went to Canada my first year for a real hockey camp. They sent 10 of us up from Greensboro, and they sent 8 of the guys home after the first day.
They didn't want to afraid, a little afraid.
They didn't want to see a body check.
Oh, so you guys were not playing the body at that age?
Oh, you couldn't 13, hit. You couldn't hit. There was.
Is that why your numbers were so good? Because no one was hitting you? Is that? Because I almost hear every week. Well, did you know I scored 39?
And, no, 38. 38 in 13 games.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, well, how many apples? Playing against?
Play for McDonald's hamburgers. Coach would take me for a steak dinner every night. I got a hat trick.
So that's why you're scoring.
It's my
so
best
much.
Friend's yeah. dad, Mike Jordan.
Oh, Mike Jordan. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I can't believe they would spend that money.
McDonald's.
Yeah, right.
But I absolutely loved it, and there was probably 7 or 8 good hockey players in the whole town. Yeah. Guys that enjoyed it, but once they got into high school and stuff, they drifted off to other things. So I got to travel, started traveling with a team when I was like 15 on the weekends.
And with the Generals?
With the Generals,
oh, the pro
yeah.
team, okay.
And the coach was a small guy, stocky guy, and he was a tough guy too. And he knew I had a little bit of a switch because of my mother yelling at me all the time. And he liked the way I played, and probably one of the most embarrassing moment of my life. They had picked all-star team from Charlotte and one from Greensboro, and we'd play in the summer. So there was actually about 1,500, 2,000 people at this game, and I was 13 playing in the 15 to 18 age group. So right off the bat, this guy runs me from behind, blasted into the boards. It hurt me, but I wasn't going to lay there. But I hear, "Are you going to take that?" It's my mom.
<Your mother>.
So I got to get up and go after this guy.
You're going to take that.
So I get thrown out. We both get thrown out of the game, and that made me madder because I wanted to play.
Yeah.
So then I go down to the locker room. I'm taking my stuff off, and then I got mad. So I come flying out of the locker room. I went in their locker room after him, and I got him. And then the next thing, my coach, who was one of the Generals players, Ted Lanyon, comes in. He goes, "Come on, Junior," and he picks me up under one arm. I was about 130 pounds. He carries me out. So I'm really ticked in. But that was when I just said, yeah, this is what I want to do. And then I went to Canada for the hockey school and stuff the next couple summers.
Who was your coach in Canada, you said? A lot of the Canadians will love this.
My first year as a defenseman coach was Tim Horton.
Wow.
The man.
Timmy
was,
Ho.
He was a beast.
Yeah?
I loved him, man. He was so good to us. You know, he worked with us and,
That's pretty cool.
Took an interest in it. So I went to that same school for 3 years.
Oh, okay. And, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, and then came back to Greensboro, and Spongy, who I started to talk about, our coach, he goes, "You know," he says, "you're just a little too small to play like you do. Somebody's going to kill you." He goes, "What if we give you some goalie equipment?" I said, "I don't care, whatever, man. I just want to play." So,
wow.
That's
how you landed up in the pipes.
I was 18,
wow.
And they gave me some old equipment, and I practiced a few months, and we were down in Jacksonville one night playing, and Jacksonville's a bad team, and our guys were taking the night off, so Spongy's just losing his mind. So he grabs me at the end of the second period, and he goes, "Go get dressed." He says, "You're playing the third period." So I go in and get dressed, and he comes in, and he's screaming at the guys, and he goes, "You guys better take care of this kid." So I went out and I played.
Had you played a game in net at all?
No.
Practice, right?
Yeah.
You were just putting them on for practice?
Yeah.
Because you only had one goalie or something?
Yeah.
How did that work?
One guy on the team used to come in at like 7 in the morning, Barry Solovero, real hard-working kid, and he'd come in, and before I go to school, he'd come in and shoot pucks at me for an hour, and then I'd go to school. And a couple of practices with the team and stuff, but it was just spongy the way he was. He was so mad. He was, "You're playing, and these jerks better play good." So I actually played the third period, had four or five saves, and made one real good save at the end of the game, and we won. I didn't give up any, so we won 3-1 or something. So that was my first game. And
impressive. Then, you're an all-around athlete, I guess, right?
We had a defenseman, Roger Wilson, that just went over and told Jacksonville before we started the period, "If anybody comes over the blue line, I'm going to kill you." So that put a little damper on them, too.
Oh, my God. That's great. Then did you – now – is that when you filled? They threw you in, and did is that when Jacksonville? Then they how did
the
that?
Next year? There was the same situation. I was in college that year, and I had to drop out, get my tonsils taken out. So the Army grabbed me because I was out of school. So I was going to have to go to active duty the middle of March, and this was like the end of February. So, again, the coach said, "Go get dressed. You're playing the third period." And we're playing Jacksonville again. So I played and didn't give up any goals again, played pretty good. Their goalie got hurt in the game right at the end. He hurt his knee. It was Ron Lowe. Oh,
no way. It was Ron Lowe?
Ron Lowe. So their coach comes down, knocks on our door, and asks Spongy, goes, "Can we use your kid? We got to play you guys again tomorrow night." So I ended up playing for Jacksonville against the Greensboro Generals the next night. They lit me up, and all the people are booing every time they'd score on me. What's that?
You got that's there. The puck.
Oh, that. Oh.
49 saves.
Did you know I still had that?
Wow.
I was soaking wet.
Oh, I bet. It's a lot of rubber.
I come in. I'd never played a full game anyway. I played periods.
Right.
And I came in over to the Greensboro room and drug my stuff in, and I was sitting there just dehydrated and shaking.
Needed some cramping up.
Needed some multigrain goldfish.
Yeah, right.
So
I'll do the trick.
So I'm sitting there. And I'm just dead. And their coach comes over again and goes, "You want to go to Jacksonville and play for us?" I said, "Yes, sir." And so they ended up taking me down. I was down there about a week in Jacksonville before I had to go enlist in the Army. So that was my games. And then I went in for active duty for 6 months, and then when I came back, I got my first job with the Roanoke Valley Rebels.
Yeah.
Wow. And how old were you at that time?
I was 20.
20, all right.
Yeah. Derek was just, he was born in March, and then I went to Roanoke in August.
Wow. Was it Southern Hockey League?
Yeah.
Now, what was the difference between them? Because didn't you play in Greensboro for the Roanoke? Because I remember I have a picture of you in, like, I guess you were playing D for the Roanoke team. Or was that just warm-ups?
No, that was
– You played against –
We were shorthanded. I played against Greensboro as a defenseman.
Okay.
We had – Pilling, the coach, he liked to use me a little bit. He knew I had a few problems mentally. And
I think we all do that know you.
Well, we're playing in the Eastern League. Your roster – was 13 players and a goalie. So you had to do whatever the heck you had to do.
Right.
And one night we had some injuries, so come down to Greensboro, and he told me pack a bag. And he used me to kill a few shifts or serve a penalty or whatever. You know, it wasn't like I was out there every shift.
How cool that'd be, though. Like, for me, like, I'm thinking as an equipment guy, trainer, well, I could never – I never played hockey, so I could never do it. But just to even get to dress and take a warm-up. We always used to say that. A lot of the equipment guys would be so sick, go no Bucky, play warm-up. And you went no Bucky and no warmie because you had the long locks. You could do it then. You might wear a helmet now if you took warmies.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you gel up.
Oh, I'd have to slick it back like Riles did.
Right.
That stuff looked like straw coming out the side, you know.
It does again.
I'd slap on my Makita helmet. helmet. I wore a helmet. I wasn't totally nuts.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, you were totally.
So one thing I was going to ask you real quick about Roanoke that I thought it was funny. I remember seeing years ago, there's a best-selling book, anyway. And it's called Young Dave.
Young Dave, there it is.
It's called Young Dave.
Oh,
I mean, this thing it's a bestseller. There's only two copies, so that's the only problem. But one of the pictures we'll put up on our page is your team picture, and I'm looking at it. And I remember years ago, Dad, and I'm like, is that Mike Keenan? Mike Keenan played on your team.
Yeah.
What kind of a player was he?
Mike actually was a cerebral player, but he worked hard, took the rough stuff. He played defense. Played center, he could play wing. Again, smart enough man, knew he wasn't going right to the pros, so he played the 1 year and went back to Canada and got into coaching and stuff. But he did a heck of a job for our team when he played.
Now, was he we'll get into him a little bit with the Flyers, but playing – was he a little goofy, or was he pretty?
No, he was a smart player. He could he just did a little bit of everything. He could pass the puck, shoot the puck. I mean, he wasn't a wizard goal scorer, but he would be your good, steady third line centerman or something. And if he played defense, he just got back there. He moved the puck. You know, just did the right things.
Was he pretty hard? You said he's a pretty hard player. Like,
yeah. He didn't shy away. Mike was probably 185, 90 pounds back then. That was average.
Right.
There was a few. We had a few big guys, but Mike didn't back away from anything. You know, good player.
That's interesting. That blew my mind the first time I saw it. I'm like, that's Mike Keenan. Right. And then I couldn't wait to ask him. I was like, was he on your team in Roanoke? Why did you never tell me this?
Yeah, I know, right?
You know.
Especially because you land up working with him later on in life, right? Did he change? Did he change quite a bit personality-wise, or is he the same guy, just obviously on the other side of
Mike,
the fence?
Mike stayed to himself, you know, even when he was in Roanoke. Me and him used to drink grain alcohol in the jersey room together after the games.
Jersey room. Well, I guess that was pretty normal.
But, Mike was with Rita then, so we'd have a couple, and he'd have to go home. But, he was a solid player. He's a good teammate.
That's good.
Well, what team was that?
Roanoke Valley Rebels. Roanoke. That's okay. A Southern Hockey League.
Right, okay. That was before the Firebirds. All right.
Yeah.
That is that's hilarious.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. What are the chances of that? Well, I was going to ask you about when you landed up being with the Firebirds. I think you have – played five games, according to HockeyDB. Five games in 3 years. Is that accurate?
I thought you played more than that.
Yeah, those records weren't real great. I played a lot more than that.
You did, right?
Yeah. We was 2 years in Roanoke with Greg Pilling. He was our coach. And then when we came up with the Firebirds, Pill was the general manager and coach. So he brought about five of us up with him. Jack Chipchase, defenseman Wayne Mosdell, myself, Dale McLeish, Rick's brother.
Okay.
But we brought Michel Pallant, Frenchman, Richard Champeau. There's about five or six of us from our Roanoke team. And then we picked up some guys like Bobby Collard and Gordy Brooks, who were our big scorers. They'd played in Washington and St. Louis. Randy Osborne, real good goal scorer that the Flyers had. But ended up with the Firebirds for 3 years and three great years. We just had great teammates, and Pill always brought in. We were always tough. You know, he'd go after all the guys we wanted to kill in the Eastern League and bring them up with the Firebirds, and we're all together. It was just a tremendous time.
You guys won a championship, right?
Yeah, we won the championship our last year.
So how did you guys draw? You played in the Civic Center, which isn't there anymore, which I wish it was because I was so young. I vaguely remember going up in an elevator. I remember Turk, Jim Evers, thanks, Turk, for locking me in stalls and shit like that. But I vaguely remember, I remember going to a game one time, and I can't remember who I went with, but they took me because you were obviously working, and they were like, oh, you should have been here last week. Your dad played, or he had to back up, or you played, or something. But how did you guys draw in Philly with the Flyers being there?
We had a really good following, actually. The Civic Center was a horseshoe-type rink, and the people sat, like, up above and looked into the ice, and then on the one end was a stage across it.
Oh, okay.
And we averaged about 6,000. The place held
that's really good.
It held about 8,100.
Oh, nice.
But tickets were $6.
Oh. Yeah.
And it was the day of the Broad Street Bullies, and we were just a little bit less than them. We had some boys that could rock and roll.
Yeah.
And
I was going to ask you that, if they were tough.
The one thing, Riley will enjoy this. One of Derek's first games, he came up. His granddad brings him up. And just happened to be a good weekend. I'd just met a young lady that summer, and I was seeing. So she was coming to the game on Friday night. And then I had another friend I just met up in Boston a little time earlier, and flying her in Saturday night for the game. So I tell my dad, Derek's pushing 6 years old. I said, okay, you got a job to do here. I said, I got a friend coming tonight to the game, and then somebody coming tomorrow night, so you got to erase his mind for Saturday night. So we go over across the street to the Hilton for drinks after the game. So they had little swizzle sticks. They were hockey sticks.
They were stirrers, right?
Yeah.
They were stirrers for drinks.
So I make a little puck up, and Derek's passing back and forth with Dale. They're having fun. He turns around, and he goes, hey, Dad, I like this one better than the one last night.
Oops.
I looked at my dad, and I went, good job.
Yeah, like, it's like it's his fault, right? Like, I'm not even six. Like, I'm really going to think of that. You should have been a little smart. You should have just sent me home or something. But I liked going. I don't remember saying that, but I remember playing.
Yeah.
You know, like in the booth there. But that's funny. But the Firebirds, they were the affiliate of the Flyers,
yeah,
right?
You guys
were
the affiliate. We had the Richmond Robins, American League, and then we were the team under that.
So the equivalent to like East Coast League then, correct?
Oh, it's called the North American League.
Yeah.
We were actually, everybody else in the league had ties to world hockey teams. We were the only ones NHL. Reggie Lemelin was with us, drafted by the Flyers.
Okay.
Randy Osborne, a guy named Doug Ferguson. But we were the second farm team for them. Coetzee and all the crazy guys were down with Richmond Robins. And the beautiful man, I met him in the early 70s.
We actually saw Coetzee this
weekend.
We surprised him. He had no idea we were in Arizona.
Scared the shit out of him.
We actually scared him. Steve!
Come around the corner.
Oh, hey! He's like, what the fuck are you two doing here? I'm like, hey, don't worry about it, Steve. Where are you going? To the bar.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Hey, anyway, that's I know Ross has a few questions about that, but during the Firebird side, I remember I have this magazine, and I'm sure you probably have a copy of it too, but Slapshot was being filmed. And I remember my dad saying, I'm trying to get in it. I'll be a Zamboni driver. I'll be anything. Like, why couldn't you have been the trainer? He didn't really say much.
Yeah, right.
Well, he was a young kid who was a trainer in Johnstown. But
so he was in hockey.
Yeah, okay. They came to us, and if you noticed, our Firebird jersey was used. We used the Bose Jarrows for the other team, but they came through. We all had to sign little waivers and stuff that if our face was in the movie, blah, 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 and all that stuff. But I begged them. I said, I just want to be in the movie. I'll drive to Zamboni because you had to be 6 feet tall. I should have got a good lawyer right there.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, right. Discrimination.
Total discrimination.
Well, yeah. Paul Newman's, I could eat peanuts off his forehead.
His forehead, yeah, right. He was that short?
Oh, yeah, he's funny. Like 5'6".
Really? I didn't know that.
And the guy that played him or did his skating was Roddy Bloomfield. But anyway, there was only five actors in that whole movie. It was hysterical. And my roommate, Mark Bousquet, who was called the Poodle, he was one of the goons at the end. We went to, they sent us to the premiere, and we're dying laughing, and all the people in the theater are looking at us, is this funny? And then they saw Bosco, and they're all looking at us.
Yeah, that's it.
The place went nuts, but it, I think that's one of the greatest movies ever.
Oh, and yeah, 100%.
It's right on the ticket.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's so in the movie, the brothers.
Yeah.
You know, oh, they're your brothers.
Yeah.
When you get on the bus, you remember? You actually played.
I played against, They're, Steve and Jeff were in the movie. Jack, who was the toughest of the brothers, was up with the Minnesota Fighting Saints, so he couldn't be in the movie. And they used the real Dave the Killer Hansen, the blonde, as his, as a brother.
Right.
Because Jack had blonde hair, but he was really mean.
He was.
And tough, So, but, yeah, I played against them. And
we got some cool pictures of that.
I got a couple. Yeah, there's some pictures of me.
And they wore the glasses, too.
Oh, yeah.
They were the only guys that wore glasses when they played?
Yeah.
God. That's incredible.
That it is.
That they actually did that.
I actually wear mine in Minsley because I can see better with them.
They wear buckets or just the glasses, no bucket.
Oh no, they wore helmets.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
But they had the tape and the whole thing.
Oh, did they?
I didn't know that was actually real.
Oh yeah, it was
hysterical. Is that more of a spectacle, or is that actually like they're actually worried about their vision?
I think they needed them to see, and they didn't want to wear contacts, obviously.
Yeah.
And then our buddy Homer played on that team, too.
Did he?
Homer got sent down from the Fighting Saints, and he played in Johnstown for about a week and a half. And we're riding into the city on the bus, and we got the radio going. They're going, Jack Carlson called up to the Fighting Saints, and we go, yeah, there's one goon gone. And they go, sit down was Paul Holmgren. Well, we didn't know who Homer was and then until we got there.
Swaparoo.
Yeah. And the only difference is Homer's got a smaller nose. So that's when the Flyers caught on about Homer.
Okay. You know,
because Pilling went back and got, you should have seen what they sent down, and then they grabbed Homer that summer.
Wow.
Okay, I didn't know that.
That is interesting. I just want to make sure that the listeners and the viewers understand that you were the equipment manager, you were the medical guy, and you were a call up backup goaltender, potentially even a defenseman, maybe at this time, or that was maybe enrolled. But you're like Jackie Moon of the Firebirds.
Jackie Moon.
Maybe some marketing, maybe some GM work.
The with the Firebirds, you played D too, right?
Yeah.
Bill, you got the unsung hero the one year, right? You played.
Actually, I did. Yeah, I. It was. I played. Oh, I don't know, about six or seven games in goal. Played out defense five or six games. Pilling got suspended. They're our coach. So they made me coach for 10 games.
So you are Jackie Moon.
And so everything went well. He had a walkie-talkie up top in the stands.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he called down. So I'd listen to him the first four or five games. And then we come back into Philly one night. So I'm turning this thing off. So Pill's sitting across from us, and I got the thing off, and he's wanting to say something. We're killing penalties or something, and I'm not answering. He's standing up, and he's waving. And I'm going, guys, Pill's losing his mind up there. I mean, get out there, B.C., Brooksy, kill out Al Bosco Dino. Let's go. So we ended up. I won 9 out of the 10 games.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
So,
that's pretty good.
We got to get a Hockey DB to update your
numbers, man. They got to update these numbers. I'm surprised Scoop didn't get this updated.
You know what? Scoop wasn't there
No.
The main time. Yeah.
No, okay.
But, yeah, I played a lot more than they showed what I did.
That's crazy.
But it was great. That team, we won the championship, and we just went to Arizona a couple of years ago, 40th year anniversary, and we had 21 guys show up. It was unbelievable.
Wow, awesome.
And we hadn't seen Bosco and Dino and I see each other, but we hadn't seen the rest of those guys since 76.
That's crazy,
it was unbelievable.
Man. I remember you telling me going to that. That's awesome.
Incredible. Yeah. So 3 years as a Firebird, and then you move on to the Maine Mariners?
Yeah. After we won, I went down one day. I was trying to get a date with one of the girls down at the Spectrum. So I'm standing in the office.
Let me put my shock face on.
So I'm standing there, and I'm talking to the secretary. Mr. Allen sticks his head out. He goes, "Hey, I want to see you." And I went, "Okay, sir." So I went in the office, and he goes, "I want you to be our first trainer in Maine." Says, "Sounds awesome to me. I'm in. Just tell me what you want to do." And he goes, "Well, we'll call you back. We're hiring a coach, and he'll want to interview you and stuff." So in a few weeks, I get a phone call from Bob McCammon.
Yeah, KG.
And so
high voice.
Everything went great, and Mr. Allen, on my first flight up to Portland, he sat me down and said, "Here's what we're going to pay you." And he says, "We know you can do the job, son," but he goes, "This isn't the Eastern League. This is professional. You're going to have to behave." Well, yes, sir, Mr. Allen, I got it. It's cool. So
you already had the street credit as being a little bit of a troublemaker, or what?
It wasn't my fault. It's usually these other people. You know what that's like,
I
Riley.
Like,
those
course,
other
yeah.
guys make you do stuff.
Guilty by association, I know.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So that's funny, Dad. You never told me that he sat you down and kind of gave you like a heads up, "Hey, we don't need this." So why don't you tell everyone about your very first game as a Maine Mariner in the American Hockey League?
Well, it wasn't our fault.
Let me start off by saying
we go into New Haven our first game. So, we'd been there like a month, and then you go to your first game. We're on the road. So we had Jerome Mrazek was one of our goalies, and we were waiting to get Rick St. Croix sent up from Philly. He's going to meet us in New Haven. So we go down that night. He never showed up. So start the game, typical American League game. It took about 3 or 4 minutes, and the gloves are flying, and everybody's off the benches. So the brawl is actually kind of calming down, and somebody was holding Mrazek, our goalie, and then all of a sudden here comes Sotard out of their net flying up, grabs him, and he's shaking him around.
So this is a bench clear has already started.
Yeah,
it's been going in.
So Sotard comes running out at the end of it, and he grabs Jerome, and the other guy's got him, and he's shaking him. I'm going, "Hey, jerk, relax." And he must have made a short joke or something, so I just had to open the door and talk to him a second. Luckily, I got the first one in before you kill me.
We have a great picture of that, too, by the way. Yes.
But, yeah, he didn't expect me to come after him, but I did, and so 4 of our players got thrown out. I get thrown out and in the locker room, and I was still a little upset, and the guys are looking at me going, "What are you doing?" And I went, "Well, we were shorthanded." And Al Hill goes, "Good answer."
Al Hill is a little squirrel. You imagine a trainer leaving the bench now to fight?
Oh,
you'd be never
happy.
You'd be banned. So you guys went home after that game, and how'd the next day go? I think I remember you telling me Doc Emmerich, the great Mike
Well,
Emmerich.
We get home, getting ready for practice the next morning, and McCammon and Doc are in the office, and McCammon comes back. He goes, "You got a phone call in my office." And I went, "Oh, great, I'm going to get fired my first game." So I walk in, I pick up the phone, and he goes, "It's Keith." I said, "Yes, sir, Mr. Allen." And he goes, "Don't worry about it, kid." He goes, "I don't like a little spunk in people."
Oh, wow. There you go.
Yeah.
A pat on the back.
He
but don't do it again.
I got fined $600. The guys that got thrown out got fined $125. I didn't barely make $600 a month. Wow. So he picked up my fine, and then I got a nasty letter from the league commissioner, about 6 pages. So, but then I got a Christmas card from him.
This is your first.
He knew who I was.
Yeah, right. This is your first game in the American League.
Yeah,
and you earn street credit like that. It's pretty impressive.
Wait till you see the picture if you haven't seen Ross. It's unbelievable.
How far into that season did you land up backing up or actually getting into a game? Because you played one game that season, right?
Not that one. It was the next year.
Oh, the next year. Later, okay.
Yeah.
Were you backing up at all, though? Did you get?
Oh, I was backing up.
You're backing up.
Yeah,
okay.
I was backing up games. Because we'd get injuries, and then they couldn't get guys in. Our farm team was Milwaukee,
okay. And
they couldn't get guys there in time. So I'd dress and, just be ready in case. But that night McCammon put me in, we were getting hammered, and everybody's yelling and screaming at him. So he goes, "You go play." I went, 48 seconds to go in the game. I went, "No, man, come on." He goes, "Get in the net." So I go out there. Face-off's in the other end of the ice. I'm going, "Well, I should be able to handle this." So don't you know, their centerman flips a puck out. They got three guys just coming. Puck's on the right wing. My defenseman's there. It was a 3-on-1. So I'm going, okay, I got this guy. Well, he dives at him.
Oh, and takes himself out of the play.
Flips a puck out in the slot. Guy that's leading the league in goals just hammered one. I hadn't even moved, and it was in and out.
At least the picture of that looks like you're moving.
Yeah.
It looks like you're moving for it.
Oh.
So
I got an earful on that one, obviously. And the next day they had a plaque in my locker with a picture of it, you know.
The good thing is, I remember Mike Emmerich saying that, well, at least they rounded off the time to – so he's all-time leader in goals. Well, I don't know.
I got the record of the worst goals against ever in the American League.
Really?
Oh,
16. They rounded it off. It was worse. It was worse than that, but they rounded it off, gave him a minute played instead. Yeah. The 48 and then, seconds.
And then we I kept – after I came out of Maine and we were down in Philly for your farm team in Hershey, so – Clarky had sent me down there to back up and stuff when they had problems. And I was up on a road trip in, I don't know where we were, up in Canada somewhere. And Shaky DeMore's the goalie. And Shaky's going, "I'm going down in the first period. We got to get your average better." I mean, you just play, Shake. We need to win.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, it would have had to have been proved. There's no way.
Yeah.
You should have gone in.
I'd have started my own bench emptier if I'd have got scored on again.
Oh, that's great. Oh, man. But so you guys were really successful in Maine.
Oh, we were ridiculous. We
really
won the first year, won our championship. We won it the second year. Christmas time, we were like 25-4.
Oh, wow.
And teams didn't even want to go on the ice. We had skill. We had so much cement, you could have built a condo. Keith Acton, that ended up playing here, he played for Halifax, Montreal's team. And he told me, he said, they come in that locker room against us in Maine. He goes, "Nobody scores the first two period. We'll try to get one in the third and get out of town alive." They had no toughness. All little guys that could fly. They had this one poor Frenchman defenseman, and he got beat up 6 times a night. You know, Cochran would give it to him, then Jimmy Cunningham and Mike Busniak and whoever we threw out there. And this poor guy just took a beating. Andre Waugh was his name. Just a nice guy, just American League player. And he'd just get killed every time they played us.
Riley might have had a situation with an Andre Roy. That was a different one, though. Yeah. Maybe that's his dad.
Could be.
Could be. Who knows? Never know. But, yeah, you guys, I remember, obviously, I have pictures and all that stuff. You guys were really successful.
You had a couple players I ended up coaching with down the road, Terry Murray, John Paddock.
Oh, yeah. We had there's so many guys. Well, we got Coetzee and Terry Murray with a trade from Detroit because Mr. Allen wanted to have a successful team in Maine, and he went out and traded, and he brought those two guys in. Murph won the defenseman trophy like 3 years in a row. We would have won that championship 3 years in a row. Lindbergh got hurt in the playoffs. He got hurt in the fourth game, I think. Fifth game, we were playing Adirondack, and they were good. They had half of the Detroit team sent down. Peter Mahovlich is playing for them. Greg Jolly, who was a big-time defenseman. They're a little tough guy, little right-winger. He's number eight. Can't think of his name. But they were loaded, but we were too. And but they – McCammon goes, you and Lindbergh are staying in this rink tonight, and you work on his knee all night. We got to have him tomorrow. And he tried, but he just couldn't play, and we lost. Or it had been 3 years in a row. But great town, great teams. And then, like you say, a lot of guys that got called up. The 1 year we had Norm Barnes, Frank Bathe, Mike Busniak, can't even think some other guys, but five guys got called up, and three of the five guys made the All-Star team in 80.
Oh wow.
Incredible. Hilly came up. He got 5 points his first game. Psycho. it was unbelievable. And
Brian Burke was there 1 year, was he not?
Burkey was there the first
American
year.
Hockey League season he played, I believe.
1 year.
Now, I got to ask, was he tough? Did he fight?
He couldn't fight, but he threw the body around.
He did, yeah.
Yeah. And then,
would he fight? Like, did he try?
Oh, he would, yeah.
He just wasn't great at it?
Yeah. Okay. No, he'd jump in and stuff. Well, in that brawl that night, in the picture, Berkey's got Ken Hodge got sent down from the Rangers. Esposito, Hodge. And Mike Corney, one of our guys they traded for, that was their big line when they were scored all those goals. And then Hodge got sent down. And then when the brawl started, Berkey grabbed Hodge and just held on.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right.
Rode the bus.
But Berkey's thing was, I'll hurt you with my shoulder more than that stick. And we going, are you nuts, man? I'll crack you right over the head with a stick. Tell me. And then you hit me with your shoulder.
Yeah, right.
I'll lay down on the floor and you can hit me.
Oh, man.
But he played his 1 year and went on to college or more schooling and stuff. And
yeah.
Off to the GM market.
He's had a great career.
Yeah, it's probably a smart move on his part.
Yeah. I think so. I think it worked out well for him.
Yeah.
I think it worked out well. He's always been good to me because of Dad. So.
But we had, you're talking about the guys, but Paddock was with us, and he wasn't wound too tight either.
Yeah, right.
He's tough.
Yeah, right.
And you didn't know if he was going to get this or a twig over the head. He had options.
Oh, my God.
I feel like it was a common theme back then. You know, these guys are wound up and ready to rock.
And everybody showed up and played their brains out every night. The effort was, I mean, we were a sick group. Nobody wanted to play the Maine Mariners.
Yeah. It kind of got that way with the Phantoms here, obviously, years later, especially the first 2 years. And then, Riles, when you came, I mean, guys, even Ryan Reddy was like, when he was the year before playing with Cincinnati, he's like, we felt like when we came into the Spectrum late night to unload the gear, like, you're like, there's like blood on the walls and shit like that. Yeah. And he's like, you guys come flying out of the tunnel and Grattan and Fridge and Riley, all these, you know, heavyweights. But I figure, you know, seeing all the names that came through Maine, like Dave Brown, didn't Brownie shave his head?
Brownie, Daryl Stanley.
No. The Bruise Brothers.
But people didn't realize that Stanley was tough as nails.
Yeah.
And Stan played defense. They put him up on the wing. You know, you didn't want to see that sucker forechecking you.
No.
And the one year we put Cocker up on left wing for a few games.
Glenn Cocker.
You know,
oh, yeah.
And, he was tough, boy. It was, but we had guys that just worked their butts off and loved the game, but just tough.
Yeah.
I guess that was the staple of the Flyers organization, right? So naturally, anybody that's coming through the minor league system had to be somewhat wired, like, or all the way around the way the actual main club was built, right? The Broadstreet Bullet.
Yeah, I don't know how to say this correctly, but you didn't have to be a total goon, but I think it just showed how much you wanted to win, what you would do.
Yeah.
You sacrifice everything for your team to win, and that's what I'm all about. I want team guys. I don't want to see a couple superstars sprinkled in, but I loved our guys there. They were tremendous.
And would you say that was like consistent around the league, like with that type of like old school effort, or is it just like you just mainly talking about like the Maine Mariners and the Flyers organization that you noticed that type of grunt work?
I gotta say we had 6 to 8 legitimate tough guys.
Yeah.
The other teams that maybe have 2 or 3.
Oh, all right, yeah.
So, you know,
that's hard to play against,
that's
right?
A big difference.
You know,
you're outmatched.
The one poor guy I used to feel so bad for in the National League was that Ken Danico.
Oh yeah,
that poor sucker was their only tough guy at the time. So you got Cocker coming after you, then you got Brownie coming after you. And he tried his brains out, but the poor man's just going to get pummeled every night.
Yeah.
But he's a quality guy, and he did it. But that's why we just keep coming at you. And then you got Paddock coming off the wing at you, you know, after these other guys. It just, you can't
different
take
game,
it.
Man. different game. It's like when people say it was a man's game. I mean, it was a crazy man's game to me, watching a lot of that. Like,
sure was.
But I do always remember how tough those teams were as a kid, you know, watching. It was wild.
Oh, yeah.
So, Dad, you're in Maine there. You guys won a few, and you got Pelle Lindbergh there, like we talked about. Did you guys come to Philly the same year, or?
I came 1 year before him.
Okay. How did he make it without you in Maine? I don't know. You guys seem like you're inseparable.
I don't know how he stayed out of jail or anywhere else. He had gone. Well, you know what? Chastain moved over that year.
Okay, so
and that was a saving grace. He had a nice little apartment downtown and stuff, but that was my boy. We had way too much fun. It's like having another little 6-year-old brother or something.
Yeah.
Every city we go to, we go to sporting goods stores, and he goes, "What's that?" I go, "It's a crossbow." He goes, "We don't have one. Let's get it."
That's not what either one of you needed.
No,
that's for sure.
We'd leave the place with a big target and a crossbow. This idiot's in the backyard, and he's trying to load the thing. Fing! It's gone. I go, "Oh, glad it's just woods out there."
Yeah, right.
But,
so, Roz, a couple of times that I went before the accident, I would come up, see Dad, and a couple of times I spent the night with Pelle, and I felt like I was a kid my age.
Yeah.
Because he had the toy cars that no one had yet, like the real fast ones.
Yeah.
Like, you had never seen these things, and they're going down the road, and I remember he's like, "Here, do one." I'm like, "No, man, he's like, "Just do it." And I ran it right at the curb. The thing exploded. He's dying laughing. He's like, "Don't worry about it, man." He can give two shits. But he took me to the mall. He'd always take me to the mall, get me something. He was awesome, man.
We're still up in Maine. So one day he decides he's going to make a airplane with a gas engine in it. So he works on the thing for about a week, paints it up. It's 40 degrees in Maine. Sunday morning, the mall's closed. He goes, "Let's go fly this thing." I said, "Gump, it's not going to fly. It's got to be 60, 70 degrees for that engine to run." "Oh, I'll get it going." Take the thing out. It did start. It went, lasted about 10 seconds. But he was up for anything. And then he got the cars, and we had those down here. They were nuts. But he
had, yeah, the one time, Dad, you had to almost strangle him. He threw me in the car. Well, I probably made it worse than it really was, but he did kind of scare me. He had he liked to drive fast, and yeah. I got in the car. We were going to the mall. I think he was going to take me to the mall, and there was this, where were we at? UPenn, where you guys practiced.
Yeah, and you're coming back up 295. Is his first Porsche, is his old copper one. So I got home first, and I'm sitting watching TV, and he come in the door. He's white as a ghost. And I went, what's wrong? He goes, we're doing 141, Dad. So Gump comes in the door, and I just grabbed him by the throat. I said, you don't do that with my kid in the car, you fool. Oh, we were just having a ride.
Casual cruise on the road. Whatever it was.
Oh,
that's crazy.
141 miles an hour.
So was he, obviously, he's still, people still talk about how great he was. Like, he wasn't overly big. I guess you didn't really have to be back then, right?
He was, Gump was about 5'8", 5'9", 180 pounds. But he was in good shape and strong, had no flexibility whatsoever.
Really?
He couldn't bend his arm up and touch his shoulders.
Why?
He's just bound up. He never stretched enough or anything.
That's crazy.
But his reflexes were so fast, he was ridiculous. But if you watched him saves, he made kick saves. He could only put one leg down at a time. But he was just a ridiculous athlete. Loved it. Worshipped Bernie Parent when he was a kid. Came over here. Wanted to do everything like Bernie, use Bernie's sticks, and I'll take the credit for one thing that helped him. He was using a live 14 stick, and it's too high, and every time he'd go to kick out, everything went under his stick. So I gave him one of my little midget live 12s. I said, here, use this thing. And then when he'd kick out with it, it stayed flat.
Okay.
So, but it took him a little while to get adjusted. And when he came down here with a big team, Clarkie grabbed him and was on him all the time about what he had to do to be the best. He told him how hard Bernie worked every day in practice and stuff. And he grabbed it, and he ran with it. He was absolutely ridiculous that last year. I mean, he just walked us through Quebec Nordiques. I mean, they were tough, good games. But he was winning them.
Yeah.
And he was, the guys loved him. He was just like having a pet dog in the locker room. Yeah. Just a clown.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Oh, man.
So who else were your favorite? Sounds like he was one of your favorite players. Who else? Because you worked with a ton of awesome dudes.
Well, I tell you why. Back then, great guys. My first year down here, get to go to National League, and I got Bob Clark, Billy Barber, Reggie Leach sitting in that room.
Yeah.
Just the first three to talk about.
Yeah.
Never any problems. Just Billy Barber go, make sure I got an extra set of liners and these plastic skates. Okay, Bill, they cost $20. Reggie, don't let me run out of sticks. And then Clark, you just make sure I got a bucket of chew going, and just watching those guys play every night, just ultimate, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
And then one of my best friends, Ilka Senesalo,
yeah.
We did everything together, our families, and Ilka and his two boys and wife actually live with me in the summer. They go home to Finland a while, and then they come back and stay with me.
Yep.
And we kept Seagram's VO in business there for a couple of summers.
It's the worst, by the way.
There you go. Yeah, we did. Karina, she's fun too. She get in there with the boys, and somebody say, "What are you drinking, Karina?" And I went, "Anything that's wet."
For sure.
Well, we had a great time, and then my buddy passed away on me, and the other guy that I hung with a lot was Mark Howell.
We had Booger
on here.
Howie's a trip, man. He's all business, but we usually had our one day a month and just come unwound a little bit.
Yeah, he's sharing a few stories.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's a good man.
He really is.
Yeah, you had the opportunity to work with some legends, not legendary hockey players only, but people, you know.
That's the thing about the Flyers. Back in those days, Keith running the show and then Clarkie, we always had solid citizens on your team. If you had a guy that was a bit of a flake or didn't really fit in, they'd unload him in a heartbeat, you know.
And you know, on that too, like Mr. Snyder, what an owner. I mean, you know, even when I was lucky enough to finally follow you and get there, like, you couldn't, and Riley, you know this, like, you couldn't ask for a better owner that really cared for everyone. You know, everyone that was there, he cared about.
He did. I mean, everybody in that room meant something to him. And when your granddad was sick and ready to pass away, we're out in Pittsburgh. He came over to me and he goes, "You go to the airport tomorrow and take my jet, go see your dad." And I said, "I can't do that, sir. It just won't work." He goes, "You be on that jet at 7 in the morning."
Yeah, I remember when you came.
Put me on that jet, went home to Greensboro, and saw him, spent the day, and then I had to go back to Montreal. And I said, "I know as soon as I leave, he'll die."
Yeah.
That jet from Greensboro got to Montreal in an hour and a half. I mean, you can actually feel that thing move. Airplanes, you don't feel move. So I get in there, I walk in my room, lights blinking. So turned around, went back home. But that was unbelievable that he would give me his jet.
Yeah, he's a good man. And you guys, We touched on Mike Keenan a little bit earlier, so he comes back now and he's a coach. So you got to, like, anyone that's played for Keenan or anything, we've had it, you got to give us something. You got to give us something on Mike. Well, I know your buddy's with him and everything, but
well, Mike and I were friends just from being Roanoke and stuff. But Mike, he could get so hard on guys and make me mad.
Yeah, hey.
You know. And then I get upset, and then he get mad at me. He goes, "This is what we're doing and this and that." And I go, "Mike, I understand how you want to run your show, but, you know, we had a few confrontations, and he get ticked at me, and then EJ and Homer come, "Sudgy, you got to back off a little, you know." I said, "I just said what I believe, and you know that my mouth flies open, and that's what happens, but..." And just some of the guys, I thought he was ruining them.
Yeah, oh, for sure. We hear that a lot. I mean, we hear a lot of guys, like, you know, like almost praise him, but then, like, you know, they talk about being hard. Was there a fine line of, like, being hard and being, like, disrespectful? And, like you said, almost ruining them. Like, there's a fine line there of pushing someone, and you're pushing someone almost over the edge.
It is. I felt bad for some of the guys, you know, like, I would even go talk to guys later. I mean, Mike made his point, but he just abused some guys so bad. Even the one guy that, Peter Zezel, Peter worked his butt off and became a pretty good hockey player and a little more hard-nosed than he would have been because Mike was just on him constantly. And I used to feel bad for Peter. And he abused Ronnie Sutter really bad.
Yeah.
Richie's on the team, and he'd go, "I'm going to send your brother so far away the hockey news won't find him." You know.
Thanks a lot.
And I go, "Come on, Mike. I mean, those guys go to the bathroom together."
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I used to feel bad for Ronnie like that because, well, both of them are just blood and guts for the team.
Right.
And Ronnie... I loved him. They're
two of the nicest guys. I mean, just the nicest.
We just had
people.
That alumni game. Yeah. Ronnie's out there hacking and chopping just like he played the game.
Well, what'd you think about old Riggs out there just burying? Not a big deal. I mean,
first shift. Yeah. Let's show them what we're here for.
Yeah. Settling down the saucer pass from Brash.
We're there on the bench, and Ryle scores, and Keenan turns around, looks at me, and goes, "Is this how this game's going to go?" We're all dying laughing.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So, also, Dad, quickly, but with the Flyers, you lost in two finals, right? Didn't you guys? Yeah, that sucks, man. You get that far. I did one.
85 and 87. And obviously Edmonton was ridiculous, but our guys played so hard. 85 we lost. There was guys crying on the plane coming home.
Yeah,
it was tough. And then 87, we really thought we had them. And then one bad break in that third period, they came back and got us. Talked to Gretzky a year later or something, and there was a scheduling problem where we had to wait 3 days. We couldn't play, and we end up staying in Edmonton 3 days for the game. Gretz said if we'd have had to play that next night, we'd have beat them. He said they were dead.
Really?
They had no legs whatsoever, and that 3 days got them pumped up. And they ended up beating us.
Well, the big question then is, where were you for three straight days, or do we want to know?
We don't want to know.
I can still try to piece that together.
Well, you know what? I can tell you.
That's all right.
I probably should tell you. I've seen this show before, and I.
I've seen this show before.
We got. You know how small that bench is in Edmonton?
Yeah.
The old one, yeah.
You can't move. You got to stand behind. So McCammon is going to give me and Kurt Mundt, the trainer, a break. He goes, you don't have to stay with us downtown. We're going to put you at the hotel across the street from the rink. And he goes, I'm tight with the owner. He's going to take care of you guys. So we're going, all right, maybe we'll get some free drinks or something. So we're in the bar drinking, and the next thing you turn around, here comes six dancing ladies. And I go,
we got to go.
it just kind of got out of hand after that. So the next night,
one way of putting it,
I'm on the bench, and I worked all the way down, not towards the hallway. I got nowhere to go. Lights are down, national anthem's going, and I hear somebody banging on the glass, and I turn around, and it's one of the dancers, and she's dropping me booklets of her, some of her pictures over the bench.
Over the glass.
And I'm going, go away, go away.
Disappear.
Keenan's
looking at me, and I'm going, I'm dead. I'm dead right here.
Oh, my God, that's great. Classic. So anyway, you lose in that one. That's that game seven. Hexy ends up winning the
Conn Smythe.
I mean, God, I mean, that was heartbreaking.
Everybody, well, and we were down, guys. Timmy Kerr's out. Poulin's playing with broken ribs. We're sticking needles under his ribs, coming back inside of him.
Wow.
He had to. It took about 45 minutes to an hour to numb him up every night. And McCremin was out. Brad Marsh played out of his mind in that playoff. He was all over the place. He played great. Howie played great.
Yeah.
Just a tremendous effort. It's so painful to lose those.
Yeah.
But that's the grind, man. Yeah, you go through that 2 months and it's a war.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, not that it's not now, it is now too, but like looking back at the way the game was played.
Yeah, exactly,
I mean, it was just such a harder game with the hooking,
right,
and the holding. And I mean, you basically had to fight.
It's
almost like being a running back in football to get through just to get a chance right on that.
Yeah.
But I obviously remember that. I think I was 16 when you guys went to Game 7, and J.J. Daniel scored that goal.
Goal at home.
I obviously wasn't there, but people used to tell me that they thought that was the loudest that building had ever been.
Yeah.
Like when he scored that goal to make Game 7, to send it to Game 7.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that. He was here. We're down on this end. And when he shot, Murray Craven was off to the side of the net. I remember Murray on his knees going nuts.
So you didn't know it had gone in?
Oh, we didn't know at first.
Yeah.
And then everybody went crazy. But it was. That almost took the roof off the old Spectrum.
Yeah, that's what everyone said. I remember everybody saying that. It was like one of the loudest they'd ever heard that building. But so Dad leaves the Flyers when Clarkie leaves. And a quick little story. So he leaves. I'm in college. I'm a freshman. So I got myself N1. Like it's like a Friday night or Saturday. I don't even know what day it is. But I like get up, go to I'm like, what's the fuck? Someone pierced my ear that night. Oh, okay. I didn't remember. Okay. So I go take a shower. Because in the fresh, you could stay, you had to stay in a freshman dorm your freshman year, like even if you played sports. So I didn't have a roommate at this time. It's second semester. My roommate, see, he got kicked. I don't know what happened to him, but either way, I go shower, come back to my room, and I got turn music on, and I'm like looking in the mirror. I'm going, you got to be kidding. I had like a lightning bolt or something. I can't remember exactly. This thing's hanging. It wasn't even just a diamond. It was like a dangling earring, man. Like Shazam or something, like a lightning yeah. bolt. And I'm like going, what did you do? Like, why did you let him put that thing in there anyway? Like, couldn't it just be a normal? Anyway, yeah. So there's a knock on my door. I haven't heard. I haven't talked to him. I open the door. There he is. Hey, Biff. He goes, what? And he goes, nice earring. And I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me right now. Yeah, so he's laughing. I'm like, I don't know what happened, dude. Someone pierced my ear last night. But anyway, Clarkie goes to Minnesota. And you guys have always been tight. He always looked after you. He looked after me as well, obviously. But you go to Kalamazoo.
Yeah.
What a place.
International League, scary. Clarkie calls me and he goes, hey, I need you to – he goes, we got too good a team down there. He goes, I don't know what's wrong. He goes, I need you to go down there and be my guy. I went, all right, I'm in. So I went down there on my birthday, turned 40. So, kid, this guy that I'd met earlier, another brilliant Finn, Jarmo Milas.
Oh, yeah, I remember him. I remember him.
Another goalie, just nuts. And so I walk in, and he goes, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm with you, man. He goes, take my car keys and don't give them to me for 3 days. He goes, we're partying tonight. So they had a couple days off. So I went to the party with the guys and all the wives and whatever else was there. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking around and I'm afraid.
That's saying
so,
something.
Yeah, so 2 days of partying and then Monday we go to practice. And Clarkie calls me, he goes, how was your weekend? I went, scary. I said, these people scared me. He goes, shut up. I went, yeah, Bob. I said, I can tell you what your problem is.
Well, you have an alcohol issue here.
So we're starting the playoffs a week later. So John Marks is a coach, great guy, played for the Blackhawks and stuff. He goes, Sudsy, I heard you're a golfer. I said, yeah, I love it, John. He goes, well, me and you are playing tomorrow. And I said, well, I didn't bring my clubs. It's the playoffs. He goes, get your clubs in here. So I call Roberta. I went, overnight my clubs. I'm playing golf this week. So we're playing Muskegon, which is like 45 minutes away, first round of the playoffs. We got tee times at 10 o'clock, playing to 3 or 4, get on the bus at 4:45 and go play the game. We swept them.
Wow.
That's just how good they were. Yeah. They had so much skill, but they were they deserved to be in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
Well, Clarkie took Minnesota to the finals. I don't know if it was next year, but they ended up going and losing to a really good Pittsburgh team, obviously. But yeah. he turned that around quick. I mean, yeah. Whatever.
They had it. Well, that's when they had all the young kids, young Hatcher,
yeah,
Medano.
All right, yeah.
This crazy little guy, Craig, little blonde, curly haired guy. He can dangle. But they played well, had a good time there. So, and then I did 2 years in the zoo, and then Clarkie called me and said, we got a new adventure. Yep. We got to go to the Florida Panthers and start that.
There you go.
That was my first.
That was absolutely the greatest year of my life, starting a place from scratch. You know, he goes, I got the team. He goes, you go build the locker rooms and the rinks and don't screw it up. I said, okay, Bob.
that was a fun year. I will have to admit, the first week when we actually started, when camp started, I was I called my mom 3 days in because he didn't let us go to bed for 3 days. So finally, the third day when I was able to call home, I said, I don't know if I can do this shit because we didn't go to bed. Like, I'm like, what are we doing? Because I remember the first night I kind of understood we take this 18-wheeler down. How many guys do we have? 80 at camp?
We had 80 at camp.
80 at camp. Insane. Roger wants 14. And the funny, I think I've told you this before, Riles, but we go to the team meeting. 6 o'clock at night, and the camp's officially starting the next day. And he's like, you know, I don't want you guys fighting each other. You know, we'll wait till the games and show us what you got. Well, they dropped the puck first scrimmage. There must have been 15 fights. I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah,
I mean,
it
was fight after fight after fight. You know, Roger, cheesy cripes. You know, these guys, I told you guys not to fight, you know, like, crap sakes, boys. You know, he didn't swear, right? So we told that story to Johnny LeClaire, dad, about, I'll never forget, us being in New York. And I can't remember Roger's, I don't know if it was his wife or his girlfriend.
Girlfriend.
He came up to you and said, oh, man, geez, Sudsy, hey, we were necking last night, and my neck's killing. And my dad, Sudsy's like, dad's like, what? You were what? He goes, we were necking. He's like, oh, did you get some, Roger? Oh, for crap's sake, Sutty. That's all you guys think about. Kind of walking off, you know, and it's just so funny to hear Roger say, he couldn't think of what he wanted to say. He was like, we were necking. You know, what? Like, necking? What the hell's that? But
I said, did she abuse you last night, Roger? No, but I'm just, you know. But he was hysterical, but one of the nicest men ever. He drove us nuts, but as a person, he is just unbelievable. He
really nice.
About a month before Christmas, he grabs me one day out on the beach. He goes, go into my office. He goes, you'll find some checks. He goes, grab one for $4,000 and just go cash it. I got to mail some stuff out. So I go and I'm digging. You know, all his paychecks are just there. He never Come even on. Cashed them. You know. So I look for one. It was, I don't know, $4,600 or something. I had him sign it. I go down and get it, and I said, what do you want me to do? He goes, well, get the team truck. I got about 100 packages to send to Canada.
Jeez. What was that place called they called it? He had a place where he had, like, camps and stuff. Yeah. Like, he
oh, yeah.
Up in Peterborough. Ontario, but we went up there for camp one year. But he was a nice man. He was such a nice man. But it was cool getting to work. And he ended up coming to the Flyers there for a little bit before he got sick.
Yeah.
Poor guy. He was a great guy, though. I remember one night, Dad, in New York when we were – they think the game was tied. And we were right in the play, in the mix. Like, we literally missed the playoffs by 1 point because Hexie and the Islanders beat us by 1 point. And we went 5-0 against them that year. We had, the team that Clarkie put together was just a hard-working team. Scott Mellamy scored 30 goals. He was the leading scorer. And, you know, if you ever said that to somebody, they'd be like, nothing against Mel, but no way he's going to lead your team in scoring, right? Like, Dad knows more about him than I do as a player, but great guy. But the team was just so close. Brian Scrudlin, the captain, one of the funniest humans I've ever met in my life. But we were Dad was known for being able to call illegal sticks. And I remember we were tied 2-2 or 3-3 in MSG. And you told Roger, you're like, was it Nemchinov or Kovalev? I don't remember. It was a Russian.
It was Kovalev.
And he was obviously young. But Dad goes, call a stick. And he's like, you sure, Sudsy? Yeah, gosh, crap sakes. I don't know. And Dad's like, it's illegal. Call it now. Because guys used to change a stick near the end of the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Called it. Power play, boom, win the game. So I thought that was pretty. Yeah, he had a good eye for it. And too tall, that scumbag. I mean that lovingly because he's awesome. But he used to do that in Hartford. He was coaching in Hartford, and we had our sticks in there one night because we couldn't move into the room. And he was measuring those things because the next day he called Mike Maniluk.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could kind of see his stick, and he had a legal one, but I got him the next year because he called Ryan Bast, and I told Beast, I'm like, this guy's going to call your stick, and I made him one, like, straighter. I heated up the blades. You know, you had those rigs.
Oh, yeah,
his was, like, really curved, and he called Beast, and they got the penalty, and I was like, I didn't know too tall that well then, but I wanted to give him the finger. Fuck you, man. But anyway, Florida was, man, we met a lot of good people. We had so much fun there.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, back in those days, we used to call a lot of sticks, and it's just something my eye, and I knew where they'd hook them or couldn't hook them. And we'd take some of our guys and make a bigger hook, but I'd shave the heel down,
yeah,
and it'd make the thing legal.
Oh, right, yeah.
But they'd break easier. But McCammon was the best. We'd be going, we're struggling. He'd turn around, Sadzi, give me something. I'm struggling here. I mean, call that guy. And he'd call it. We'd get a power play. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
So that was a good year, and then we I got to work with my dad. Like I said, that was my first year, and once I realized what was going on, then I kind of understood. But you threw me to the wolves the one night, not purposely. The team's on the road, so they split the team. Well, one team's coming back, and it happens to be John Van Beesbrook is with them. The bus is supposed to bring the gear to the arena. Guy never shows up, just goes to bed, takes the players to the hotel, goes to bed. All the gear is soaking wet. Oh, no extra laundry. Boys come in, and I stay up all night. Can't get a hold of him. He's in Hartford. I think you guys were in Hartford.
Yeah.
And these guys had played Tampa, so long story short, boys come in carrying their bags, and thank God for Joe Sorella, Joe Mama. He was like, don't worry about it, kid. I'm like, Joe, I was waiting here all night. Like, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where you guys were. But Beezer comes in, what the fuck is going on here? This is bullshit. I had to go through it. I knew nothing, man. I've been doing this for a week. And, like, laundry, like, I had to open up all new laundry because their shit was soaked.
Right.
But I'm like, all right, I don't know how this is going to work, how much longer. I've been to bed once in 4 days, and now I'm getting screamed at by some dude I don't even know calling me a motherfucker and this and that. And I'm like, but I ended up loving Beezer. Like, once we got to know him, he was – But he was an unbelievable player that year. He was an all-star. Like he kept the team in so many games. And Mark Fitzpatrick too had a good year. He was a little wild.
Yeah,
Fitzy
was out there. But Beezer, I never seen anybody. He put a clinic on every night. I'd seen him play in New York and stuff, and he was good.
Yeah,
he was ridiculous. He just everything is in the middle of his body, but he was pretty demanding.
Very demanding.
Is there anything?
Trainer! You hear him screaming. The one night he's screaming, Trainer! Not even a name. No. Trainer!
Yeah.
I think the one night I went in there, he's like, and he sees me, he goes, get your dad. I'm like, all right. What do you need? Go back to, dad comes down and goes, his Kleenex box was half full.
Come on.
I was doing the medical and everything else, so I'm in there with somebody and Beezer was freaking out. He usually yells Sudsy all the time. But I had to go in. He had to see my face. And I went, what's up, Beezer? And he goes, I need Kleenex. So I just get him a thing and give it to him. But the guy was great. And he was always good to us other than he get a little strung out at the game.
Yeah, that sounds like.
Yeah. So then we came back to Philly for a couple years and you know, I got to work with Dad then, and it was a half season. It was great here, being back here doing that, and we had a lot of fun. A couple of good years too, good teams. We made it to the conference final. The one year the Jersey ended up winning, right? Jersey ended up winning, yeah. But we lost to them. But
that's when we made the trade. We got Johnny and Rico or Desjardins. Good guys, loved those guys, and we had good players. We had Rex too, and then Hextall and Gar Snow, two beautiful people beside one out trying to outdo the other one, who was goofier.
for sure.
Pretty incredible story. I mean, you know, I didn't know half the stuff and. To hear you know your journey and bits and pieces of how you introduced Nasty to it and the whole bit is pretty amazing because
I was really fortunate.
Yeah.
I got to do what I wanted to do, but I was hooked. 1959, I saw that first hockey game and I just loved it.
Yeah.
I remember more then players' names than I know what went on last week.
Yeah.
We just had, before I left town in Greensboro, we had a reunion. We had about eight old Greensboro generals and one guy from Charlotte. One of their goons came over to our party. It was awesome just to see guys like that.
That's cool.
That is really, really cool.
Dad, I know you're doing, we'll wrap this up, but I know you're doing a lot, still doing a lot with the alumni and the Philadelphia Warriors.
Yeah.
Yep. Brad Marsh doing an unbelievable job.
Yes, he is.
With all of that. And
I really enjoy that. He got me involved when they first started. I came up from Carolina. We had the training camp and stuff, and treated them like pro players right off the start.
Yeah.
And Brad's worked really hard. I mean, we started out with one team, got three teams now.
He's got so many.
Just won the championships.
Yeah, that was awesome. All three teams, too.
Yeah.
You were up here for it.
It was.
Now, when's your rings coming in?
I'm waiting on that ring. Yeah, I don't know.
I didn't know if you were.
You what, that game was so, the last game was so good. There was about 8 or 9 Flyers out there watching the game. They were banging
on
the
glass.
Yeah,
that was great. I saw that. That was great.
Yeah, and I went. So I walked around. They were standing where we left. I said, "The boys, that's real hockey out there." And they all were laughing, but they thought it was great too. But these guys are so into it, and they listen to Marsh just like they're 9 years old, and he's their squirt or peewee coach, and he's done a heck of a job with that, grown that.
Yeah, it's amazing. And all those guys are such good dudes. Riley and I get to spend a lot of time with them, and they're just great guys, man. Yeah. So I'm glad you're getting to do that to help them, too, because I know they love all the hard work you and Turk and Hedgehog and everybody does. So, and
they
Culpy.
Feel like pros.
So
we enjoy it because they're just so into it. You see what they get from it. I should change one of my questions and dump Hextall and say Mr. Duffy's my favorite.
I was going to say, Duff's going to be a little upset if you don't go with him.
Got to throw him
he's,
in there.
He's the man. He's exactly. the man. But thanks, Dad. We appreciate you. I know you had a long day and not feeling the greatest, but we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, it was great. Appreciate
it. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Suds. That episode was brought to you by Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. My favorite medical marijuana dispensary.
I know it is.
Been working with them for some time. Appreciate the support the last few years. And whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Have questions? Visit Curaleaf.com or stop into any one of their 12 locations. Want to talk medical marijuana? Let their confidence become yours.
Yes, sir. They are awesome. Awesome.
Appreciate the support.
Yep, 100%.
Did an amazing job. And big thanks to Sudsy, Dave Settlemyer, your father.
Yep.
The legend.
I guess I have to take him. I mean, he's my dad.
He's your dad.
He's a mess.
He's a beauty.
Yes, he
one
is.
One of a kind. What an amazing story. I had no idea. I mean, I knew a lot about Sudsy, obviously from you.
It's crazy how he got started. And, you know, I forget sometimes that he actually played professionally.
Yeah.
Like, he was a trainer, man. You see the guy. He's 5'6".
Oh, man.
I used to, you know, I would get so excited when I was a kid, and I would come up. As I started getting older, he practiced every day because Ron Hextall didn't like to skate on game days. So my dad was practicing every day, and, you know, I didn't think anything of it until I got a little bit older. I'm like, dude, he's going to get killed. Look how little he is in the net. But it was fun getting to see him do that, and he actually, we didn't get into this because Dad could talk forever, as we see, but he actually backed 2 games. He was the backup goalie for the Flyers for 2 games. He was so nervous he didn't situate himself at the bench. I remember the one time I turned the game on a Sunday afternoon, and they were playing the New Jersey Devils, and as I turned it on, Doc Emmerich's working for the Flyers at that time, him and Billy Clement, I believe it was, and they show a picture. As soon as I turn the TV on, there's a picture of my dad in his Maine Mariners uniform. And I'm like, what? And I started listening, and I'm like, he's been forced into backup duty today for the Flyers because Ken Reggett took a puck in the neck, and Pete Peters wasn't even supposed to back up, but he did. They didn't think anything would happen. Reggett gets a puck in the neck, can't play. Pete goes in. So as soon as I see this, I call my dad in the Spectrum in the medical room where his office was. And he answers the phone, and I'm like, Dad, are you going to play? And he's like, Biff, I got to call you back. And he hangs up on me, and I'm like, damn. And me and my best friend, wow. Kent Chilton, we're sitting there, and we're losing it. And, of course, I'm hoping he's going in, not knowing, like, obviously now at this point, I'm like, geez, if he goes in, like, he's going to shit his pants. But I just wanted my dad to get in the game.
Oh, man, so that would have been wild.
Find out afterwards, Pete Peters was cramping so bad. He was so dehydrated, but they were giving him IVs. And after the game, my dad called me, and he's like, I'm sorry I hung up on you. He's like, I was literally sweating bullets. I thought I was going to have to play. This was a playoff. Like, we had to win to get in the playoffs.
Imagine that.
So we didn't get to talk about that, but that was one of my favorite things as a kid, seeing him. And it happened one other time against Detroit where he was forced to back up.
Oh, that's incredible. So, we'll have to bring him on for 2.0 for that story. But, yeah, there were so many stories. The whole journey itself is
it's crazy.
Surreal. Coming from North Carolina.
That's the
funniest thing. And equipment manager, medical guy, defenseman, goalie. I mean, up and down all around.
He didn't mention he actually had a full ride to University of Tennessee to play defense hockey team. And that summer, their program folded. That's why he ended up at High Point University on a baseball scholarship.
Oh, wow.
He didn't even talk about his baseball. He was a hell of a baseball player.
Wow. Hope to get him back on.
Yeah, so.
There's a lot of gold there. I mean, says he loves to talk.
He loves to talk. Well, we saw that. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but he gets going. But it's pretty insane how it happened and being a stick boy. Like, he had no intentions on being a goalie. He just was helping out, right?
Yeah, yeah, just filling where he could.
Next thing you know, he's on a 5-10-day contract and he's 18 years old. So it was cool. There's so many things, but it's pretty cool. Sometimes I kind of forget about it, but
it's interesting, and to hear it, from his mouth and understand your roots a little bit more, too, is pretty cool. So we'll definitely have to bring him back on, he's got so much there. And, again, he's been around these Flyers guys forever, and knows probably more about these guys than most people. So
he saw a lot, and I learned a lot from him. That's for sure. I used to think he was crazy, couldn't understand why he had me do the things I did until I was in charge of my first team with the Phantoms, and then I get it, because everything is a reflection of you.
Of course.
So people used to laugh how, like, if an elbow pad was out of place, I had to go move it. They're like, "What's nobody even sees that?" I'm like, "I do."
Yeah,
right. But that's how he was.
Yeah,
so.
For sure. That's great.
Anyway,
well, that's awesome. It was amazing. Good call bringing Sudsy on. Loved every bit of it.
Yeah,
do it again. So that's a wrap. Episode 53 in the books. Nast
53.
All right.
Thank you guys for everything, all the support. It's been awesome.
Appreciate it. Until next week. Dropping episode 54.
Yes,
stay safe, knuckleheads.
See you, knuckleheads.